since I was not an employee of the hospital and I had just came on scene offering my services, in my mind, I was going in to help in surgery, being, you know, from my PA background. But again, when I came through the door, the VP met me and asked me to immediately go into sterile processing because they were not producing instruments.
What if one conversation could save a life? What if one new process or new product could save a patient from surgical harm? Broadcasting from a hospital basement near you, you are listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the global voice of sterile processing. Each week, we spotlight the best practices, products, and people from around the world who are disrupting our profession and helping you fight dirty. Every instrument, every time. Join us as we have the kinds of conversation that matter and give our industry the kind of voice that it deserves. Nyt on aika mennä puhdastakin puhtaammaksi. And now it's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Dwayne Taylor, Director of Sterile Processing and Distribution at Cincinnati Children's Hospital and Medical Center in Cincinnati, Ohio. Prior to his role, he served 22 years as CEO of Sterile Concepts Healthcare Consulting, Inc. and Executive Director at Sterile Tech Staffing. Dwayne has over 29 years of clinical experience in surgical services, materials management, central sterile processing, and supply distribution. He received his healthcare training while serving as a combat medic and surgical technologist in the U.S. Army. Dwayne has traveled the country as a public speaker and consultant while helping healthcare organizations develop their CSP training programs. He enjoys engaging and mentoring CSP professionals who aspire to grow their skills and pursue leadership roles. He currently holds the following certifications: Physician's Assistant, Certified Surgical Technologist, Certified First Assist, Certified Registered Central Sterile Technician, Certified Instrument Specialist, Certified Healthcare Leader, Certified Flexible Endoscope Reprocessor, and Approved Certified Educator. He graduated from the Academy of Health Sciences, Fort Sam Houston, Texas, and the College of Healthcare Professions in Houston, Texas, with a Bachelor of Science degree in Healthcare Management on the President's List. His personal mission is to raise the bar of performance in CSPD by delivering clean, complete, and sterile instruments to every patient, every time, on time, and to properly educate and or train the sterile processing professionals entrusted to provide this service to the community. He established Sterile Concepts Healthcare Consulting for this purpose with an intense focus on staff development and regulatory compliance. And Mike, there are so many things in this bio, and sometimes we don't read the whole thing, but this is going to be a moving interview with Dwayne today. It's going to talk about the leadership. It's going to talk about the training, and it's going to talk about raising the bar.
Well, yeah, absolutely, Justin. And I mean, I know the topic of the interview is, you know, being prepared for disasters. And we're going to talk about that in the context of one of the, you know, worst situations that you can possibly imagine. And we'll get into that during the interview. But I think the key that we have to think about here is preparedness, right? Dwayne had all these things ready to go so that at the moment it was needed, he was exactly the right person for the job. And so we're going to talk about what that looks like, you know, in the event. But one thing we have to remember is that he was ready to go from the beginning, you know, so he had all of these certifications already. So, you know, this is what we mean when we say preparedness. You don't prepare the day of, you have to be prepared in advance. And so I am very excited to get into this interview.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. the ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST, a closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. One Tray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. One Tray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. One Tray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTracks adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Dwayne Taylor, Director of Sterile Processing and Distribution at Cincinnati Children's Hospital and Medical Center. And Dwayne, this is going to be a topic that I'm not even sure I ever thought we would cover on this podcast, but I know you bring a great deal of extremely recent and relevant experience to the table. And we're going to be talking about emergency preparedness, disaster planning, and response in a crisis. And I'm just so grateful that you're able to come on and share your insights with our listening audience today. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
And as we were preparing for this interview, we talked a little bit just about your background and your experience. And really, I think this adds to just what a credible reference you are to speak on this subject. And it has a lot to do with your military experience. And obviously, you as a sterile processing director, you know, very much relate to the topics that we cover on Beyond Clean all the time. But that military experience has also really lended a great deal of value in this interview. So why don't you talk a little bit about your military background and how you got into sterile processing?
Well, I started my career, again, around the Desert Storm era. I left college and joined the Army and went in as a combat medic and surgical technician. I was sent over to Iraq, again, as a combat medic with the 4th ID or 4th Infantry Division attached to 10th Combat Support Hospital, and acquired firsthand battlefield you know, trauma experience and so forth. Of course, after leaving the Middle East and coming back stateside, I wound up going to PA school, became a physician's assistant, and of course, worked in the OR with routine cases, and went into leadership and took over sterile processing. Being in the military, being a surgical tech and a sterile processing tech was the same job. We rotated 3 months in the OR, 3 months in sterile processing. So that's pretty much how my career started in sterile processing.
And I also want to just tag on to that, the leadership piece, because I have an experience as a registered nurse, but I wouldn't say that we got a great deal in my baccalaureate training on leadership and how you develop leaders in healthcare. Can you maybe dive a little bit deeper into that military experience and just how that gave you the leadership skills that you could bring to the department? Because I think leadership is something that isn't often taught and definitely is something that is role modeled. And I'm sure you've impacted the people around you because of your background.
So one good thing that I learned I learned many good things in the military, but one of the things that really stuck with me was their leadership training program. Of course, they have defined programs just for leadership called primary leadership development. And of course, that's where they take the lower ranking staff and they put you through leadership development, getting you prepared for non-commissioned officer status. Again, you go through basic leadership training, how to lead, your platoons or your soldiers, how to mentor, coach, pretty much basic leadership skills, communication, problem resolution, critical thinking, things of that sort.
So leadership really ties into the whole purpose of this interview or the whole focus of this interview, which is emergency preparedness. And I know leadership is a key skill in those situations. And it's really, I think everybody that's going to be listening to this podcast is fully aware of the unfortunate events that unfolded on October 1st of 2017. You were in Las Vegas at the time. So why don't you talk about what happened on Route 91 that night?
So on October 1, 2017, I was actually, I had just left a contract assignment in Sacramento, California, and I was supposed to be retiring. Well, I called myself retiring, and I had a home in Vegas that, of course, that I had acquired through divorce. So Vegas became my new home. And 5 days into my quote unquote retirement, that's when the October 1 event happened. One of my previous staff members in Sacramento actually called me up that night and notified me of what was going on because I was actually in the bed. And I got up and, you know, of course, when I heard someone was shot in Vegas, again, I really didn't think, you know, too much of it because it's Vegas, you know, lots of money, lots of gambling, you know, people are probably always getting shot in Vegas. But when he said it was like 60 people, that number really hit me hard. So I got up and I called one of the VPs of surgical services that I knew and one of the local hospitals, and he asked me to come right away. So I came and it was just chaos. Kind of took me back to my military days, and he knew that I had extensive background in sterile processing. They had no instruments, and he just asked me, just go into the instrument room, get us instruments. So that's how everything started unfolding for my part in the October 1 event.
Now, Dwayne, I want to back up a minute and just lay the groundwork for this particular event that we were discussing and just go through some of the statistics so that our listeners are aware of just the gravity of what we're discussing. You know, this was the Route 91 shooting in Las Vegas. This is generally regarded as the worst mass shooting event in United States history. There were 58 people who were killed, at least 413 who were wounded by the shooting, with panic and trampling injuries, bringing the total of injuries to about 869 total injuries that were involved. You know, this is perhaps one of the most tragic events in our nation's history. And so I just wanted to get a feel for the department itself, you know, because obviously we've talked a little bit about your leadership that you bring into the department. So why don't you tell us about the department? Can you describe what is the dynamic that's going on in that department, maybe prior to this, and then once you get in there?
So, again, since I was not an employee of the hospital and I had just came on scene offering my services, in my mind, I was going in to help in surgery, being, you know, from my PA background. But again, when I came through the door, the VP met me and asked me to immediately go into sterile processing because they were not producing instruments. So when I went into the SPD department or the sterile processing department, if I had to take a guess, maybe 20 staff members or 20 people in there working. And so I took a quick assessment and, you know, of course, people were working as if it was a normal day. I saw some people had circumcision trays, and some people had some septoplasty and ENT type instruments, and laparoscopic type trays. So I gathered everyone around. I didn't know any of these people. They didn't know me. But I kind of gave them a quick briefing of what's going on in the OR, and we need to focus on trauma trays. So I asked who knew ortho, who knew cardiovascular, who knew orthopedic trauma, who knew thoracic, and I split the staff up into small groups. And the people who were not very, I guess, engaged, I used pretty much as runners to, as trays came out the washers, to get them to the teams. If it was ortho trauma, if it was cranies, they would take those trays to the team. So I wanted to keep the teams at the tables instead of having them get up, walk around looking for instruments. So it was pretty much just getting people focused on trauma and not on instrument preparation. So it was moving all the background noise, all the non-essential instruments out of the way, moving all the trauma instruments to the front of the queue.
There are a couple of just really incredible things that you're bringing up. Number one, for those people who are in sterile processing who really wonder if they personally make a difference, I think that your experience in this particular event proves that the OR needs SPD to continue doing what they do. That if they don't have the instruments, they can't save the lives. And right. So it's fascinating to me that, you come on to the scene almost like a ringer, and the VP says, he doesn't send you to the OR, he sends you to SPD. And that's incredible, because that the recognition that, if we don't have the supplies, we can't do the procedures. And so that's amazing to me. And the other thing that's amazing to me in all this is that we see a consistent problem with sort of this separation between the OR and SPD, to where even when something that is this dramatic and impactful that's going on right now or at that time, SPD is almost oblivious to that. Like the pressure is almost – they're almost oblivious to that. And so I want to just kind of ask, how did your experience in the OR allow you to communicate that pressure and that importance to the SPD staff?
So my experience in the OR has helped me navigate through the SPD-OR continuum very fluidly, because I do what I consider – I speak both languages. One of the things I've realized throughout my career is OR and SPD speaks two different languages. OR, they focus on time, staying on schedule. SPD, we tend to focus on processes. And oftentimes the two butt heads, and that's where a lot of the friction comes into play, because SPD is trying to do things the way we're supposed to for patient safety and compliance, whereas OR is focused on time, getting things turned over, getting that next patient in. So I'm able to speak both languages and translate one to the other. So one of the things I believe in is when I'm in a leadership position in SPD is I believe in taking my staff to the OR. Probably 95% of the staff that I've managed over my career has never been in the OR, has never seen a real case, has never seen the instruments used. So there is a disconnect between SPD and what happens in the OR, because they don't see the result or the outcome of the work that they've done behind the scenes. So I try to remove that barrier and give them a peek behind that veil so that they understand the impact that we have, whether positive or negative, on what happens in the operating theater.
That's incredible, because we've talked about the need of speaking the right language several times on the show. But typically when we talk about speaking the right language, we're talking about the difference between the way clinicians and administrators speak. You're saying that OR and SPD have two different languages, which is something I don't think we've ever talked about before. But mm-hmm. what you're saying makes a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's incredible. So I guess probably the biggest challenge then with a process focused group like SPD in a trauma or a, you know, a mass casualty event is how do we maintain our processes when we're put under the stress of, you know, these mass events. So I'm guessing that your military background really equipped you with some critical thinking skills. So can you just walk us through kind of what you were prioritizing and what those critical thinking skills were kind of just fleshing out as you were trying to figure this situation out?
As you go into a new facility, not knowing the inventory, you're trying to get a quick lay of the land. You're trying to see what's there on the shelf. So as I broke the staff up in groups, just pushing what was currently there on the shelf, general, ortho, CV, thoracic, OR, people from the OR was constantly coming back. We need. The people who are sterilizing, like, okay, do we have that in the sterilizer? No. Okay, I don't see one here. Okay, take this set. So if they're needing a abdominal tray, we didn't have an abdominal tray ready. We gave them a GYN tray that was coming out of autoclave or cooling because they needed to get into the belly, peritoneal cavity to control some bleeding. So it had basic clamps, exposure instruments, basic retractors. So we did a lot of, or I should say we did some substitution that night. Trays that they wanted, we may not have had readily available, so we gave them trays with similar type instrumentation. So that's where some of the critical thinking skills, I guess, kicked in. You know, basic exposure. If they're doing orthopedic, you know, they're trying to expose, you know, a femur. We may not have had the small frag or bone set that they needed, so we gave them basic ortho instruments. We knew we had one coming out in 13 minutes where they can get started with this tray. By the time, you know, they get exposure, get bleeding controlled, the tray would have been out of the autoclave and rushed it to the OR. So, you know, just knowing how surgery progresses, knowing if they're going to fix a fracture, soon as they make an incision, they're not going to need those fracture instruments. Just kind of keeping in mind how surgery progresses, about how much time we would have before they would need those instruments in their hands. And that's where a lot of that critical thinking came in.
Well, and that ties in really nicely to something that you were saying earlier regarding, you know, your experience in the OR. Since there is such a separation between SPD and the OR, if we are not equipping our sterile processing technicians and especially our sterile processing leaders to understand surgery, then mm-hmm. they can't make these types of critical thinking decisions. That only happened because you had that experience and were able to make those critical thinking decisions when no one else had that ability. So, again, we've talked about the need of getting up into the OR and observing those cases, and you've already mentioned it because I think it's so critical, because if we're going to service the OR, we have to understand surgery or else we can't make these types of decisions. So, yeah. I think that's incredible.
I make that part of my onboarding program where my techs, they actually spend a week rotating through the ORs. I actually speak with some of the surgeons ahead of time and, you know, pretty much build these relationships so I know who are the surgeons who are good at teaching or who doesn't mind having observers in their rooms. And again, I don't want to just put my staff in, you know, cases where they really can't see anything. I like them to be in the orthopedic rooms or the abdominal rooms where, you know, these big cases, you know, not just lumps and bumps and so forth, but I really want them to see how these instruments are used or how these instruments actually are, how the surgeon uses them to heal, you know, patients and so forth. So, and on the flip side, because we have that veil or that wall between OR and SPD. I actually work with the OR educator or OR leadership, and I get it to where all the incoming nurses and surgical techs now have to spend a week in SPD learning our side of the fence. So, and what that begins to do is, look, number one, we learn one another, not just by name, but by face, because people are less likely to be rude and nasty to you if they know you somewhat. And it gives them a realistic idea of what it is that we do in SPD. I can't tell you how many hospitals I've been in around the country where the thought process from the OR is, if we give them these instruments, we should have them back in 15 or 20 minutes. And that's not how the process works. And I've educated nurses and surgical techs that have been doing their jobs for 10, 15 years, and they were totally surprised when we walk them through what it takes to achieve cleanliness, sterilization of instruments, to get those instruments ready between patients. That, you know, a lot of them have never gone through that process, just as a lot of our staff in SPD has never gone through spending time in the OR. So it's a real learning experience on both sides of the fence.
That is absolutely a best practice. And I always ask when I'm doing presentations at regional seminars, I take a quick poll in the room, how many people are going to the OR when they start their sterile processing careers and getting that training, or they're starting even at a new facility. It's important because every place runs a little bit differently. And I get a show of hands, and then nurses in the room or surgical techs in the room, I ask them the same thing. And then I ask how many of them did that as part of their curriculum or their onboarding process. And we do get a mixed bag. And I'd even say some regions, you see a lot of that being that happening. And then other regions, you don't see it as much, but it's 100% a best practice that shared sort of knowledge and exposure and training is so critical. And there's lessons to be learned, which really ties in to sort of the next thing that we wanted to talk about, was some lessons learned from that experience that night, because you talked before we got on the interview about a debrief, and you just mentioned about your relationship with the surgeons. And part of that debrief was getting together with all the people in the OR and SPD to sort of evaluate what had just happened. And I'm sure some of that is just because people have an emotional response to the situation. Some of it's what can we do better, but everybody's got sort of something to say and an immediate reaction. And that's such a healthy thing to do culturally. I'm so glad to hear that you did that. But one of the things you told us was that they had even noted how important your military experience was to the success, to the successful response in that situation. Can you talk about that? And then I want to tee up maybe a deeper dive into some other lessons learned from that event.
A lot of things that happened that night, again, it wasn't, we did not have a successful outcome because of SPD. The stars actually lined up that night, and people from various departments actually responded. They came in. It was not part of the hospital's emergency response program, but people from various departments showed up, and they did what they do for the most part. And one example that I would like to point out, for instance, this was not part of their emergency response, but it was very critical. So someone from the supply chain department, again, just had the critical thinking to, I guess they were non-clinical. They did not have skills when it came to, you know, patient contact and so forth. So they actually got into one of the big trucks and drove. We had a warehouse. The hospital had a warehouse there in Vegas for their little hospital system. They went to the warehouse and got lots of supplies, Pluravax, sponges, things of that sort. About, I say, 5-6 hours into the night, the ER, they were coming to sterile processing and central supply needing chest tubes and Pluravax and, you know, all types of items, and they were pretty much tapped out. And out of nowhere, this truck shows up with pallets and pallets of chest tubes and, you know, things of that sort that they were needing in the ER. No one put an order in for them. No one told this person to go to the warehouse and get them, but they had the, you know, the mind to go and, you know, act. So the same way that I guess I responded in my specialty or in my field, I guess they did the same thing as it pertained to what they do on a day to day. So there were people who from various departments who responded based on their skill set. And when all those actions came together, that made a success for that night. And when we sat and we debriefed, when leadership sat and we debriefed, the questions were asked, you know, the how, the whys, and who instructed, and is this part of the emergency plan? And we found that a lot of those actions were not part of their emergency response plan. However, we took those lessons and we actually incorporated a lot of that into their emergency response. So again, like I said, those stars just happened to line up that night. And so these people, they from these various departments, they instinctively knew what to do. And again, we had great outcomes because of that. And, you know, these responses were actually incorporated into the emergency response plan.
And again, you know, that just goes back to the impact that non-clinical people can have on clinical outcomes. I mean, that's just something we will never really know is, you know, how many lives were saved by the quick thinking of this supply chain person who, I mean, we don't know who that person was, but yet by their quick thinking and just doing the right thing was able to provide the supplies necessary for the clinicians to be able to do their task. Mm-hmm. Now, you've talked a couple of times about the debrief process. And so I just wanted to kind of get an idea of what some of those recommendations that you came up with for just general disaster preparedness, because I mean, I think it goes without saying, but we do have to remind everybody that the nature of a disaster is you don't know when it's coming. Nobody woke up on the morning of October 1st and said, hey, we're going to be ground zero of, you know, the worst mass shooting in U.S. history today. So we better get ready. You know, nobody knows when these things are going to happen. So from your perspective, what are the steps that leaders, particularly those in sterile processing, need to take today to get ready for a disaster?
So I'm going to speak just based on my experience from that situation and, you know, the things that I learned and took away. And some of it I, you know, had previously known, but I learned so much more that night. Now, when I stepped into the department, I told you there was 20-something people, you know, there working. Well, I found out during the debrief that only 8 of those people actually worked in sterile processing there at the hospital. The rest of those staff were from neighboring hospitals, hospitals that were not trauma centers, hospitals that did not have a 24-hour sterile processing, but they had a good relationship with the staff, you know, at that particular trauma center. So they, again, as you know, instinctively, they heard what was going on and they just responded. So they came to the trauma center or to the medical center and they were there to help in sterile processing. So what that helped me, or my takeaway from that, was I began building relationships with the managers or the nurse managers at some of the local surgery centers, and to try to incorporate their staff into our call lists in the event of a trauma. Because oftentimes you're absolutely right. You don't know when these things are going to happen. They just happen out of the blue. And anyone who works SVD knows it can be a struggle just to keep up with the regular scheduled day-to-day workload. When trauma hits, you don't know what's coming down the pike. It's unorganized, it's chaotic, and you just have to be ready to respond to whatever you're asked for. And having those extra hands on deck really, really helps. So I've incorporated that into just my regular practice, building these relationships with, you know, outside centers that I know don't operate 24/7 or that's not going to receive trauma. Another takeaway for me was the mentoring of staff. Looking at the staff, the seasoned staff who have that potential, who have critical thinking skills, who have the knowledge of, a lot of the instruments or a specialty, working with them, getting them to understand what trauma is, because many of these people, they've never been through something of that sort. They haven't served in any type of combat situation or high stress situation, like the military. So getting them to understand and to be able to increase or advance their critical thinking skills. And again, this is where going to the OR, seeing cases, speaking with physicians, this helps them to develop that critical thinking and being able to substitute instruments in these types of situations. Physicians, yes, they want this, but you give them that, they tend not to make a very big fuss of it. And I also have a liaison, or I try to have a liaison that interacts with the OR staff. As we give instruments to the OR, again, we try to keep the line of communication open as well, letting them know, although we gave them something that they did not ask for, we try to keep them informed as to the status of when we can release the item that they're actually needing. So, and again, I've in my career that has been received pretty well, especially in these type of situations.
So many great themes on this podcast: leadership, communication, talking the right language, cross collaboration, exposure and training, setting people up for success, and then knowing your instruments and even substitutions to make the best of a very urgent and critical situation. And I'm really sorry that you had to go through this and your coworkers had to go through this, but I really do appreciate you sharing your lessons learned and your experiences with our listening audience, because emergency preparedness and disaster planning is a rising topic in healthcare. It's becoming much more of a focus, and everybody knowing how they can be part of that, or having a greater appreciation for just how quickly you have to be ready to act. And really what you said about all the coworkers from multiple departments, just intuitively knowing what they need to do and going and pitching in, so critical. Take action, do something. So thank you, Dwayne, very much for coming on the show today.
You're very welcome.
That was Dwayne Taylor, Director of Sterile Processing and Distribution at Cincinnati Children's Hospital and Medical Center, talking about emergency preparedness, Mike. And I'll be honest with you, I have some experience in this arena, but it's not something I ever thought we'd talk about on Beyond Clean. But boy, what a testament that Dwayne wasn't even working at that hospital and jumped right in a very critical situation.
Yeah, and that really, like I said during the interview, I really think that just emphasizes the criticality of sterile processing in these events. Speaking as a technician, oftentimes we just don't think of ourselves as being critical, especially when something really awful has just happened. And yet, what do we see in this exact situation was what that hospital needed was a sterile processing leader. And, and thankfully Dwayne was there. And so he was able to get plugged in. And I mean, who knows how many lives were positively affected because of the leadership of that moment. So again, I just go back, man, don't ever doubt that you make a difference in sterile processing.
Yeah, it's sometimes these kinds of interviews put things in great perspective for everybody, and that is something that's really important. Like you said, don't ever doubt that you're making a difference or that you can make an even bigger difference. Don't hesitate to jump in. And that really goes to our interview that ended last season with Lindsay Brown and that whole battling of self-doubt. And so sometimes we get thrust into circumstances that are out of our control, but boy, you have to take your hat off to Dwayne for really jumping in on this one and getting involved. And hats off to him. What a high character individual.
Absolutely. That was a fantastic interview. And just his ability to lead in that moment in a hospital that he wasn't even working at, but still had that leadership skill to walk in and make that kind of difference. I was just blown away. Absolutely blown away.
All right, me too. And that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike and myself, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Beyond Clean.